Hi, and welcome to the latest episode of the Making the Media podcast with me, Craig Wilson. Thanks a lot for joining us. In this episode, we're going to talk about journalism. It's a trade which almost constantly these days seems to be under attack, whether that is from politicians talking about fake news or from dwindling audiences losing faith in what they're being told and exhibiting news avoidance. This could be by either not watching the news at all or getting the news from other non-traditional sources, such as messaging apps or social platforms. But what if there was a different way to gather news and engage with audiences and communities to restore trust and to deliver news which is seen as having real value? That's what Damian Radcliffe is outlining in a series of reports which he has co-authored on community-centred journalism. Damian is a journalist, researcher and professor based at the University of Oregon in the Western United States. With more than 25 years of experience in the media industry, he has worked in editorial, strategic, research, policy and teaching roles in the US, Middle East and the UK. He continues to be an active journalist, writing regularly, and his work focuses on digital trends, social media, technology, the business of media, and the evolution and practice of journalism. The first of a series of reports, called Redefining News, a Manifesto for Community-Centered Journalism, has just been published. So, what is it? What does it mean for journalists? How can it change the perception and value of news? And can it be made to pay? Let's start with Damian outlining just what community-centred journalism is.
Historically, journalism has been a very top-down process. Journalists have determined these are the issues you need to know about, and we're going to tell you about them, and we're going to determine what you need to know and how we're going to share and distribute that with you. And this model really turns all of that on its head and says journalists don't know best. Audiences, communities, they know what their information gaps are. They know what information they need to be able to prosper and thrive and survive in their lives day to day. And our role as journalists is much more kind of service oriented, working with those communities to identify what their needs are, and then determine with them what is the best way to present that, and holding journalists accountable throughout that process. So not just working with communities to develop the inception of an idea, but throughout that entire process from inception to publication and beyond, constantly working in partnership in tandem with those communities to make sure that the work we're doing actually fulfills real information gaps.
What do you think it is about the, I think, peculiarly set of circumstances that exist at the moment about journalism that dictates that there is a need for people to take a different view and perhaps to take the kind of approach?
Well, I think there's a number of factors. I mean, the first thing to say is that some of these things, as you say, are based on where we are today. So we know that, you know, trust in media and trust in journalism is at or near pretty much all-time lows. And that hasn't really changed over the course of the last decade. So if we continue to do what we have always done, the data would seem to suggest nothing is going to change. That trust needle is just going to stay exactly where it is. We also know that business models are changing as well, increasing emphasis on reader revenue, on membership models, kind of moving away from advertising funded media. And therefore, that means you have to be much more alive to the needs of your audiences and to demonstrate that you are meeting them. So this is also a potential model to engage with audiences, rebuild trust, and also perhaps bring in revenue from audiences. That's not the primary goal, but it is a potential benefit of it. And then the third thing to recognize is the fact that there are many communities that have always been poorly served by the news media and by journalism, that have been misrepresented, misconstrued, overlooked, had really bad experiences of working with journalists who often kind of parachute in for a story, have a very exploitative relationship with those communities, and then just disappear when their job is done. And so what we're advocating for in terms of taking a community-centered approach is saying we have to change, you know, all of those things. And in particular, that kind of relationship with audiences that have have really had bad experiences of working with journalists and journalism in the past. And to do that means looking beyond deadline, looking at building long-term relationships, co-designing how stories are told and produced, and recognizing that so much of this is focused on addressing questions of audiences and really, really listening to what their needs are throughout this process.
You mentioned the word there, parachute, and there's a phrase in the report which talks about parachute journalists or parachute journalism. Is that just not the nature of journalism in some respects? Because something happens and you have to go and report it and then you move on to the next thing.
It can be. And I think, you know, that has always been the case and will continue to be the case, that there are always going to be examples of that. But so much of this also is around issues, say, of news and media literacy, that, you know, if you are from a community that has had very little experience of working with journalists or interacting with journalists, then you won't necessarily understand this is how media works. And so, you know, I think about kind of examples where, so I did an interview a few years ago for an NPR program, and I spoke to them for about 20 minutes, and the show is only 15 minutes long. So I knew that only a small fraction of that was going to be used. In the end, 7 seconds of what I said was used. And I'm a journalist and I understand how these things work. But if I wasn't, I'd be really pissed off that I'd invested all of this time and thought and such a small element of that had been used. And so one of the ways we can navigate around that is by actually explaining journalistic process to the sources that we're working with and explain, well, this is what we're looking for. This is how what you tell us is going to be used. Even if we're not going to use all of these quotes or this video or this audio, you'll be able to shape the story, you know, and keeping people in contact as the story is produced and then published is also, you know, incredibly important, so that then when it drops, there's no surprises and people feel that essentially either the journalist has come in knowing the story they already wanted to tell and they're just looking to get a soundbite that reinforces a perspective and point of view they already had, or that they really weren't just that interested in what that source had to say. And so there are a lot of people are very disaffected with the experiences that they have had with media organizations, and often with good reason. And so even in a case where we might have to parachute in to do something, there is an importance, I think, in taking a step back and taking a beat and actually explaining what we are doing, how we're going to do it, and why it works in that way to audiences. And I think, you know, just small things like that can do a lot in terms of addressing some of the trust issues that we see all around the world among populations and their attitudes towards journalism and the mainstream media.
Yeah, there's another phrase that's used that talks about journalists need to be collaborative rather than extractive. And I thought that was a really interesting way of describing that. What in many ways, I guess, is like a transactional relationship that would exist today. So do you see this as something that's moving along? It's not necessarily about journalists living in the community, but it's about them understanding the community's needs a lot better.
Yes, I mean, I think a lot of this is very much focused on local journalism, and that a lot of the best local journalism stems from people who are part of those communities, and therefore the kind of issues that communities are grappling with day to day are part of your own lived experience and part of your own DNA. But I don't think it has to be exclusive to that. I think you can still come into communities and report on them in a fair and reflective way. The key thing, as you say, is about it being collaborative. It is about taking time to understand the issues that a community are facing, and potentially working in partnership and in collaboration with different folks across those communities to really help understand the nuance and the history and so forth of those issues. So one of the things we talk a lot about in the report, and we'll talk more about in kind of future studies, is the importance of partnering with civic organizations, trusted community leaders, other organizations like libraries, churches, and so forth, that can not only open doors to communities and help you find great stories and case studies and people to talk to, but can also give you that context which can often be missing.
I mean, sometimes journalists and journalism, it has to be contentious because you're trying to investigate perhaps and extract information that people don't want to be shared. So how does that square, if you like, with this collaborative approach that perhaps you want people to take?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because this is not about PR. This is not about just, you know, shining a light on a community in a way that they necessarily want to be portrayed. It's still bringing kind of robust journalistic sensibilities to this and being very clear to the community that that is how things will work. But the key thing is really understanding the kind of issues that those communities are facing and how to best address them. So there's an example that we give in the report that's produced from Philadelphia by an organization called The Trace, who talked to their community about issues of gun violence that they had contended with. And, you know, this is an issue that we see sadly across all of the states. And there's, you know, huge amounts of column inches that are produced about this. And what that community said was, well, actually, the thing that we most need is to know where we can get information and help about the resources that are in our community. And so that organization put together a directory of resources that you could then search for at a neighborhood level to address those specific needs. And I think, you know, journalists traditionally would have responded by saying, well, we'll write a 5-part series doing this. We'll do a deep dive on a specific family, a specific community, a number of specific instances. We'll do a data piece to kind of explore whether this is becoming worse or how things have changed over time and so forth. All of which is really, really valuable journalistic work, but it's not what that community needed. What that community needed was something actually which more simple to some extent, but was this kind of directory. And I think that's a very, very different way of working and of recognizing that for us to be effective, we have to understand what communities need and then try to meet them. And in doing that, we can still bring journalistic rigor to our work, but the way in which we are presenting that and the questions that we're answering may well be different from the ones we would otherwise historically have undertaken.
An issue that we've talked about in a few other episodes within the podcast is about diversity and inclusion within the media industry more generally, but then specifically within news organizations. Is that also part of the challenge, that unless there is a change in the diversity and inclusion of the diversity of the newsroom, you're not actually going to be able to address some of these underlying issues about who sets the agenda?
Yes, 100%. There is a huge diversity problem across the journalism industry in the US, as there is in many other parts of the world. You know, it is too white, too middle class, too college educated, not enough people who actually come from and have that kind of lived experience of the communities that they are reporting on. And that is a huge, huge challenge for journalists to understand the issues that really matter to those communities if they're not from them, or they don't really understand the challenges that those communities are grappling with. And that's why we talk about the importance of listening and of collaboration, and also of just finding kind of new and fresh ways to be able to tell those stories. So I think a good example of that would be the Documenters Network, which is led by City Bureau, and they train citizens to go and report from public meetings. So public meetings are a really kind of core part of kind of journalism's journalistic work and the work that journalism does. But as the number of journalists that we have are reduced, the amount of public meetings that get covered has dropped precipitously, and that means important stories get missed, and we know there are a whole bunch of kind of knock-on effects for that. So part of City Bureau's solution has been to train people to be essentially note takers at these meetings, to be able to live tweet from them. They have a template to fill in terms of kind of what are the key things that are going on, and then this essentially becomes raw source code, if you like, for journalists to be able to dive in and identify, well, these are kind of some of the stories we might want to kind of explore in more detail. But of course, they can also tap into the people who were in that meeting, who took those notes, who are from those communities, who will also be able to potentially guide those journalists to particular issues that they think need to be addressed, or this kind of history and nuance that might otherwise be missed just from looking at a transcript. And that tends to be a much more diverse cohort. And a number of those people have then subsequently then moved into, I mean, they get paid to do that work, but they then moved into more paid and substantive reporter roles. So I think we do have to kind of really look at a number of kind of questions around diversity, equity, and inclusion, which includes the pipeline for journalism, as well as how journalism is produced.
Obviously, here in Europe, there are a large number of organizations which have a public service remit, often funded through taxation or funded through governments. But the vast majority of the world news organizations are commercial organizations. So I guess one of the questions has to be about this is there any money in it for them to actually think this is an attractive thing for them to do?
Yes, I mean, that is a good question. And to some extent, I'd say it's probably too early to be able to define some of this stuff. And in terms of the sort of correlation between producing community-centered journalism and the implications of that for your bottom line. And I can well understand why a lot of journalists would be skeptical about this because it's a different approach. It's stepping away from kind of the traditional news cycle. This work takes time, it takes resources. Building relationships and undertaking collaborations is hard work, and you need to be able to demonstrate a return on investment. But to that, I think there are kind of two really important points to note. The first is to say, well, regardless of that, we should be doing this. Like there should be a recognition of the fact that journalism needs to serve a wider audience base than it currently does. And so purely just serving the needs of your subscribers is a surefire way of creating more news and information deserts. So there is a wider value, and I think that's where public service media, sector media is so important in this, in terms of that remit to reach the widest possible audience. But I would also encourage, commercial organizations to be thinking in that way too. This is not just about your financial bottom line. There's an altruistic element to this. There's an element of being kind of good citizens, of uplifting the whole sector through the work that you do. But then the second point to say, I think there actually is starting to see some emerging evidence to say that this can work. And if you look at membership organizations, you could say Tortoise in the UK, Voice of San Diego, and kind of Texas Tribune and others here in the US. What we have seen with those organizations is they are very open and transparent. They are very accessible. So the fact that if you are a Tortoise subscriber, you can participate in a think-in, you can essentially join their editorial meetings, and you can offer suggestions of ideas for stories. You can provide your feedback direct to journalists. Many of these organizations, Tortoise is a national organization, but many of the kind of local ones will hold things like meet and greets in a downtown bar where you can actually come and interact with journalists. Others, we've seen this at more kind of hyper local places, will hold the equivalent of office hours where they'll say, well, I'm going to be in this coffee shop between these hours on this day. Come and talk to me about the issues that matter to you. Come and give us feedback on the stories that we've produced. What did we get right? What did we miss? And it starts a dialogue and a conversation. And those kinds of dynamics are really interesting in terms of building trust, building visibility, but also in some cases, that access comes at a cost. You have to be a subscriber, you have to be a member, you have to belong to a particular tier. But there is evidence that suggests that organizations that are kind of open and visible and transparent, people are much more likely to give money to them because they feel that their voice is heard, and that there is a much greater relate. They feel like they have a real relationship with that organization, a real bond with it in a way that historically they haven't done with many organizations that have kind of just kind of broadcast news and content to you rather than even part of a genuine two-way dynamic.
You see this as a way of combating news avoidance, which I think is something that, people who are involved in the journalistic industry across the globe, see as a big problem these days.
Yeah, it is a huge problem. And like with trust, it's not really changing. So, people are massively fatigued by the sort of doom and gloom, if it bleeds, it leads kind of approach that we still see across too much news media. they feel overwhelmed and exhausted by a lot of the kind of negativity of a lot of those stories. They don't necessarily feel that it's relevant or that it speaks to them. And I think sort of certainly post-pandemic, people are much more conscious of their mental health and mental well-being and the detrimental effect that kind of traditional journalism can often have on that. So that requires us to do a number of different things, from looking at the range and breadth of stories that we produce, the ways in which they are told. So I'm a big advocate for solutions journalism and journalism. I read so many articles, particularly on issues around climate, for example, where I think, well, this is great. What do I do about it? And that is the missing link. So that's kind of a really important part of this mix, you know. And as is this issue of bringing more people into the fold to understand the stories that matter to them and helping to address those. So I think if this does feel as if the news agenda is designed kind of more in partnership with audiences and with communities, that may well help to begin to address some of those issues of news avoidance.
There's a theme that comes through in the report, and I think it's a theme that actually, if you spoke to almost all news organizations, they would subscribe to, which is about engagement. You know, all news organizations these days will talk about engagement. They want to engage with viewers, they want to engage with them on different platforms and things like that. But do you think the type of engagement that currently journalists are attempting to do, and the type of engagement that you are proposing in community-led journalism, is actually two ends of the spectrum in terms of the kind of engagement that is actually going on?
Yes, that's a really good way of putting it. I mean, engagement is a very loaded term because it means such different things for so many organizations. You know, we will talk about engagement in terms of page views or time on site or bounce rates. You know, it's sort of a catch-all title for so many different things. Or organizations will say things like, well, we have a comments section on our website, although many of those are being turned off. You know, this is an opportunity for you to engage with us, or you can reach out to us on social media. There are all these different ways in which you can engage with us. But actually, that's not real engagement, because so often that you get, first of all, a lot of that commentary and kind of feedback is quite vitriolic and not very constructive or helpful, which is why many journalists really don't want to read their own comments, and will kind of step up, be very keen to hit the block button on X and kind of other platforms. So you're often kind of getting unhelpful engagement kind of feedback, or it's coming from a very small number of people that are kind of constantly responding to everything. And it's not necessarily helping you to determine the value and impact of the work that you're doing. So a lot of what we're proposing here, it involves kind of stepping away from digital solutions to that engagement. Actually, a lot of that, particularly for local organizations, is around more face-to-face work. But there are examples of digital work that we've seen where that 100% works, but it is a different dynamic. So I talk about, I think in the report, ProPublica is a good example of this. There's an example from Alabama that's going to come out in the next report in this series, of a project that was set up to support women and women's issues in Alabama, where these organizations have been using private Facebook groups to create a fora for communities to talk about the issues that matter to them. And that can be really valuable in terms of providing inspiration for stories and approaches. But to this point of not being extractive, it's also a very much a genuine two-way dynamic. So journalists who are overseeing and monitoring these spaces, if they see issues arising or kind of topics being discussed, not only will they then say, well, we might go away and explore this and here's what we did about it, they're also sharing information and resources directly with that group to address questions that are coming up. So they're, you know, being sort of helpful community members. And that in turn builds trust amongst that community that this is not purely a forum that's been set up to squeeze out stories and sources. They actually feel like it's part of a genuine online community. And that is, I think, a very different type of engagement to some of the examples I've mentioned earlier. You know, it's very It's very human, it's very tangible, it's very direct. And again, it takes time to do, but I think it can pay real dividends in terms of the relationships you build with those sources and the trust that they also have in you. And I think there's also a really valuable knock-on impact to that too. Like if you're involved in one of those groups and you've had a positive experience, you're going to tell other people about the positive experience that you had. And the same is also true, going back to one of the things we were saying earlier, if you feel you've been exploited by a media organization, you're going to badmouth them too. So much is just about being much more savvy about relationship building and treating people with due respect.
You've alluded to a couple of times in the interview, Damien, that the report is part of a series. So, what are the other sort of chapters of the book, if you like, going to focus on in the next couple of reports?
Yeah, so this is the part of it's the first of three, and partly that was because we felt that if I published it all at once, it would just be too long and no one would read it. And you know, as a journalist, you want to be read and you want your work to be valuable and useful. But at the same time, we also felt that for some organizations, just this kind of very concept of taking a community-centered approach would in itself be potentially challenging. So we wanted to sort of take people on a bit of a journey, if you like. So the first part we talked about today is really sort of saying, well, what is community-centered journalism? Why do we need it? And what are some of the kind of core principles that are embodied within it? And then if you buy into that and you subscribe to the view that, okay, you know, we have to do things differently, we have to try to find ways to find new stories, fresh stories, be more impactful in the work that we are doing, try to rebuild trust and address issues of news avoidance. How do we do that? So part two is going to be case studies. You know, journalists love case studies. We want to, you know, if we buy into the principles, how have other people put this into practice? So the second part is going to have 10 case studies from different parts of the US, covering a range of different topics, serving different audiences, and also different platforms to demonstrate that this is a model that can work for, not necessarily for every story and every beat, but can work for any medium and a wide variety of different types of news organizations. And then the third and final part will say, okay, we've explained what this is, we've shown you how you can do it. What can we do to kind of grow this as a practice? So that will look at some of the kind of core challenges that are faced, how to address those, and then also to sort of reiterate some of the key principles that you have to really make this a success.
Damon, it's a really, really interesting topic. You know, I always feel with journalists, I could talk about journalism all day. So it's great to have the chance to chat to you about this. As you know, there's a question I ask everyone on the podcast. So I'm gonna ask you it, which is, what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
Yeah, so the easy answer would be to say my three children, but actually they're really great. The thing that keeps me up at night is usually doom scrolling by me on my phone and my poor sleep habits, and a sort of a fear of missing out. I mean, so much of my doom scrolling actually is just there's so much amazing journalistic work and thinking going on. I don't want to kind of miss all the kind of interesting innovations and case studies and practices that are taking place. And so that's often the thing that keeps me awake at night is almost an excitement about all the interesting things that are happening across our industry. You know, we know that the economics of journalism are difficult and challenging right now. But that aside, I think it's also never been a better time to be a journalist. There are so many incredible outlets producing fantastic work, so many different avenues for journalists to be able to go and produce great work. I think that's, you know, incredibly exciting. And you know, that's what often keeps me awake at night is just disappearing down the rabbit hole of finding one thing that's super interesting and then the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And you know, it's not a bad reason to not sleep enough, I guess.
I love it when people are excited about the opportunities which exist within the world of news. But what do you think about Damien's views and the report? Let us know on social via the various Avid channels, or you can follow me on X or Instagram, where I am CraigAW1969. Please leave a review, share, and subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice to get notified when the next episode is out. Check out the show notes for links to the report itself, and also a recent webinar looking at new developments in news gathering and collaboration. That's all for now. Thanks again to Damien, and thanks to our producer, Matt Diggs. Thanks, of course, to you for listening. Until next time on the Making the Media podcast, for me, Craig Wilson, it's goodbye.